You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Fosma Moon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 585 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined today by Mr. Fosma Moon.
Is this Dots, Lines, and Destinations or Planes, Trains, and Automobiles?
Well, we haven't taken a train. Have we taken a train? We haven't taken a train yet.
Yes, we have.
We did?
At Dallas.
Oh, yeah. And it's Seattle. The underground
train. Yeah.
Foz and I are currently driving by Orange County Airport.
Yep.
On our way down to San Diego. Yeah, we're doing this. We're doing it live. Just a fair warning. You may get some road noise. I think Seth's algorithm for getting rid of the road noise works pretty well, but just a warning for you if you're listening to this and wondering what the sounds are in the background. The big news, I guess the biggest news, is Spirit
has closed up shop.
Spirit is no more. They closed up at, I guess they ceased operations at 3 a.m. on
Saturday morning. One of the last flights was Chicago to Dallas, I believe.
Chicago to Dallas. So now there's a bunch of parked planes, Spirit airplanes, in different locations. It's 11,000 employees that really, I don't think we're expecting this to happen so suddenly, but the CEO, you know, basically wrote an email, a release saying it's, you know, with fuel prices and the way things are going, the amount of cash that they would need to continue was just not obtainable.
Which, I mean, makes sense. I mean, fuel has, you know, we're seeing a number of airlines shrink their operations
because of the fuel price.
Yeah.
Right. So I had dinner with someone who works at an airline last week, and they're dropping a bunch of routes. And they said it's because we could make it work if it wasn't $4 fuel.
Yep. And that number, the $4 fuel, is probably going up in the next week or two. From the pragmatic perspective, it probably makes sense for Spirit.
Yeah.
And do you really think they didn't expect this? I mean, it's been in the news for weeks now.
I mean, I think employees were probably preparing themselves. But for kind of the 3 a.m. lack of formal communication, no press release from the airline.
Well, I think the best part in that vein was up until midnight Friday night, they were still selling tickets.
Yes.
And at this point, it had already leaked out that they were planning to shut down at 3 a.m., so you have to sit there and go, like, why are you selling tickets if you know you're not going to fly it?
Yeah. I think that's the thing, is like people were, I think, taken aback by that a little bit and probably rightfully so. I don't think it's a good thing for the industry. I know a lot of people are saying, prices are going to go up. It's going to be hard to correlate that because prices are going up because of fuel right now.
Yeah. I mean, look, prices can only go up so much, right? We are still beholden to the law of supply and demand,
right? The airlines have created so much inventory in the last decade. Even with Spirit going away, there's still a lot more inventory now than there was than there was likely 10 years ago. So we'll see. I think it will definitely impact. Like, Spirit, what did Spirit really achieve? Spirit pulled people out of buses and put them on planes.
Or the couch.
Right. And I think those people will have to revisit how they want to move in the forthcoming times. And we'll see. Right. We do have low cost carriers out there, right? Spirit wasn't the only one. Allegiant, Frontier are still out there. We'll see.
Do you think this, I mean, JetBlue's clearly the next worry.
I feel it. Think it's JetBlue and not Frontier?
I think so. I think JetBlue is in more of a
financial precarious position compared to Frontier.
Yeah.
Losing money, trying to figure out what they actually want to do. I think Frontier actually knows what they do, and they do it okay.
Okay, that's a fair statement. Do you think it's JetBlue that's more at risk or American?
I think American has its own issues. I think American has enough cash to keep going. Whereas with JetBlue, I'm not sure that the cash is there.
And even, like, right, they might not have the cash, and do they have the credit?
Yeah. Yeah, the credit is a good question.
Right, like AA, look, for what, as dysfunctional as AA is, they do still have a lot of valuable assets.
Yep.
As a whole, right? What does JetBlue really have? They've got some planes, and they have JFK.
Yep. And a decent gate network at
Boston, I'd say. Yeah, I mean, they definitely have that, but no one's clamoring to get into Boston.
Yeah. Fair point.
Right. But in the wake of Spirit's exit, JetBlue is adding a bunch of routes out of Fort Lauderdale now to fill in some of the void that Spirit left behind.
Do you think that's the right move for JetBlue?
If they can fly it without losing money, yes.
I guess the question is, can they price it to capture the right amount of traffic out of Fort Lauderdale and other Florida airports?
I mean, you can always price it to capture traffic. The question is, are you making money at that point?
Yeah. And I think that's where I'm skeptical of JetBlue doing this. I know why they did it, you know. And the other part of this, too, is other airlines, United, American, and Delta, all kind of came in and said, look, we've got fares to help Spirit customers that are stuck.
Relief fares.
United was the only one that really spelled it out on their website, like how to book it and what to do. Delta and American seemed to kind of half bake it.
But that comes back to the fact that United owns a technology stack.
Yes.
Right. Like, and like one of the things, if you go through, like, they want proof that you were scheduled to fly on Spirit within a certain window.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To be able to get those fares. So, like, think about it, right? From United can do it in-house, whereas Delta and American are at the mercy of their GDS partners to be able to do something like that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Good point. What does the future hold, then, you think, for airlines?
I mean, the fuel thing is going to be the big wild card, right? Fuel is going to determine how the airlines deal with this. But I mean, look, you and I have been in this game long enough to know that we are due for a reset in the industry.
Yeah.
The industry has been on highs for probably the longest run in my life that I can think of. And so at some point, right, like, airlines are very cyclical businesses. And at some point, that cycle, just as fast as it goes up, it's going to come down too.
How do you, I mean, when you think about it, right, we've talked about growth. Like, the big thing is growth. Can you keep growing? With fuel prices where they are, with the prices continuing to go up, is it now a question of which airline manages, not contraction, but maybe staleness, better? And that's the winner?
I mean, I don't think it's so much staleness. I think everyone's contracted, right? It's just how publicly they're contracting. Like, I'll give you a great example. Newark, Toronto, there used to be, like, there's half as many flights now than there were 6 weeks ago.
Yeah.
8 weeks ago. And so the airlines are definitely cutting capacity across the board. It's just a lot of them are doing it very quietly.
Do you think it's a cutting of capacity because there's no demand, or simply because they can't make the route work financially?
Well, if they're just cutting capacity on routes that they're keeping, they're trying to drive the per seat cost up.
Yep.
Right. So basically what that means is
they can't afford, like Newark, Toronto, as an example, there are times when you can buy a ticket for $129 one way. That might not be feasible anymore. Yep. Right? Because they're on regional jets. The per seat cost on a regional jet is higher than a mainline jet.
Yep.
And so, right, so you have to charge even more of a premium, if you will, on that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I see what you mean. Like, they're trying to get the price to go up a little bit or enough to cover the fuel cost difference.
Right.
And still make money. All right. Well, it's good stuff. In other news.
Well, we can talk about JetBlue a little more.
Okay, let's talk about JetBlue.
Do you think they're going to hold on to international, like long-haul international?
I think that's the first thing to go at this point. If they're trying to make good decisions, I feel like a good decision is to maybe kill the international stuff. Amsterdam, Heathrow. What if they start? They just started
Edinburgh, Dublin, I think,
and Madrid, right? They just started visiting Madrid too.
Yeah. I agree with you that the right thing for them to do is exit Europe. I do not think they will do that.
Do you think there's too much pride?
There's too much hubris in this case.
Yeah. 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 Makes some sense. It's disappointing because it will hurt them, I think, in the long run. I don't think they can dictate the fares enough there to make a difference for themselves.
Right. Like, look, they were mildly successful before the $4 fuel.
Yep.
Right. Now, all those costs are going up even more. And particularly in Europe, right, the fuel costs are likely higher because they're having even more constrained supplies than the States are.
Yep.
So, right, that only adds to the impact for them even more.
Yep. Let's talk about United. 767. Venice to Newark. This was on Sunday.
Sunday the 3rd.
And it hit. It was coming out of Newark. It was coming on the crosswind runway.
Yep.
Over the turnpike. And hit a light pole and a 18-wheeler semi.
Yes.
And to do that, it had to have been very low.
Very 16 feet.
Maybe a little bit higher because of that turnpike there kind of goes on a little bit of a hill.
No, where that is at, that is flat.
Absolutely flat. Okay. So, not good. The plane's out of service.
The plane is out of service. According to the air traffic reports, the controllers, there's a hole in the plane somewhere.
Okay.
It was originally scheduled to fly on... They took it out of service for a day. It was originally going to fly on Tuesday to Barcelona, and they've since grounded it altogether. I mean, I've always joked about landing on the turnpike. I didn't think anyone would take that literally.
Yeah, and it's hard to know. Like, I mean, it's easy to make accusations, but it's hard to know what actually happened. Was it wind shear? Did they have a sudden loss of altitude, or was it, you know?
Look, I will be honest, right? Like, if I was a wide-body pilot, I would be clenching very hard when I have to land on 29. It is a ridiculously short runway with highways at both ends.
Yep. And you...
Like, there's no margin for error on 29.
And they've proven that.
They have now proven that.
So it'll be... I mean, I think the NTSB is going to investigate. I still haven't seen any reports of them being dispatched. But we'll see.
Because...
Yeah. Delta pilot issues. So
we talked about this a few months ago.
Yeah, that we talked about there's been some scheduling issues with pilots, and there is apparently some abuse of the call-out system. Basically...
The on-call system, not the call-out.
The on-call system, sorry. That is allowing pilots to essentially not pick up a trip.
But get paid for it.
But get paid for that trip, or partially paid for the trip.
Yep.
And that's continuing, and it's causing some cancellations and issues. Yeah, you noticed yesterday there was, I think you said 100 cancellations.
Yeah, there was a fair number of cancellations yesterday. Like, the weather this weekend was perfect for flying.
Yep.
So Friday, Saturday, and Sunday is my understanding that they had a number of cancellations and even a lot more delays.
Yep.
Right. And so, like, you sit here wondering, like, if the pilots are going to play this game, right? It's like, in the end, it's like they're just going to hurt that. Because the environment we are going into is likely not the time you ought to be screwing around.
They should probably remember that, you know, a bunch of mileage just became available from Spirit.
There is that as well. But, like, you have to wonder what's going to happen as thunderstorm season rolls in and peak summer rolls in.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And the on-call system is necessary to make that work.
Yeah. And so it's interesting. I was digging through Flyer Talk the other day, and there are people who are now saying that they are defecting from Delta to United because of all the operational challenges that Delta has been exhibiting for months now.
Have most of the challenges been out of Atlanta, or is there another hub that's feeling this more than others?
I think it's depends on the plane type.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
But Atlanta will, I mean, that's going to be the largest base, right? So yeah, they're going to feel it more than anywhere else. And I think every plane type touches Atlanta.
Okay.
But I mean, we'll see how this all plays out. But it was interesting. Some of the commentary that people were making, which I hadn't really thought about this, but one of the things that I read was, because United is in far more, all of United's hubs are in far more constrained airports, they are better at dealing with irregular operations than Delta.
What is the math there? What do you think the reasoning is?
Well, look, San Francisco, Chicago, Newark. These are all disaster airports, right? Yeah. Someone sneezes the wrong way and things go sideways pretty quickly. And that's been like, for as long as one can remember. So they've got used to that. Whereas like Atlanta is just like stuff as much as we can until we get a thunderstorm or an ice storm and then everything just falls apart. Right. Minneapolis, same thing. Like they know how to deal with the snow, but the moment like they get a freak thunderstorm in the summer, things start falling apart.
Yeah. Yep.
And I think that's a very good astute observation on that person's part. So United has, in essence, become more seasoned on irregular operations because its business and its locations had forced it to.
Interesting. I mean, it makes a lot of sense when you think about it from the perspective of they are used to those airports operating poorly.
Right. Exactly. Right, like on average, what you would say, 40% of the time, Newark, San Francisco, or Chicago have a problem.
Yep.
Whereas, like Atlanta, Detroit, Minneapolis, those are 5%, 10%.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the question is what does summer look like for Delta, if this goes on, and they don't get a handle on it? Do you think they can get a handle on it? I guess that's the first question.
I don't think they have the ability I think Delta struggles from a number of issues, which a lot of it stems fundamentally back to the technology stack. Yeah, they've made, and we saw this with that crew scheduling disaster for onboard crew a few months back, where they had their meltdown. It was all because the crew system just couldn't keep up.
Yeah.
And that comes back down to the technology changes that they have made over time. And candidly, they haven't been investing in technology nearly as, like, you look at the airlines, right? United is at the forefront of investment in technology. Delta is not. Delta is, like, what I would say is United is a technology-led company. Delta is a marketing-led company.
And they've done a good job of being a marketing-led company.
But because they have failed to do the others, they are losing their marketing edge now.
Mm.
Right? Now that they're becoming operationally unreliable, you can do all the marketing in the world, but it's not going to pull you out of what customers believe the reality to be.
Mm. Yeah.
If there's a series of negative experiences, people are going to be like, well, yeah, okay, sure. Yeah, like those TVs are great, except I still need to get where I'm going.
Yeah. Good point. Fair point. So then what does summer look like? Is it lots of cancellations? Is it?
It depends if the pilots want to cooperate or not. Right? Like it's a while. It is. We can't tell because it's, it's up to the individuals who are the parties in this.
And do you think there's a coordination between the pilots to do this?
I don't necessarily think there's a coordination, but I think someone figured out that they can game the system. They got around and everyone's gaming the system.
Yeah. So it really does need to be technologically.
Yeah.
Or the incentive to do this is taken away.
Exactly. Right. Like you can't, it's not easy to go back and change the contract.
Yeah.
Right. So it's not going to be an easy fix. And for Delta in particular, they have to be careful because the pilots are the only real unionized workforce they have.
Yep.
And so they don't want to kick the bee's nest too much where the other groups suddenly want to unionize.
Mm-hmm. The flight attendants all of a sudden become unionized.
Yeah. The ground workers, the flight attendants, you know, all this stuff. And so Delta is in a bit of a conundrum on how they navigate this. And this is why they don't talk about it. Like, one of the things you'll notice is there's no one talking about it in widespread.
Yeah.
And I suspect that is why.
Interesting. Could we just briefly talk about California drivers?
Sure.
This is insane.
What part?
All of it. The lane changing, the signaling going the wrong direction, the speed.
Wait, who's going the wrong direction?
No. Like, well, this car turned on their signal, and then they signaled right, and they went left.
Oh, I thought you meant coming at us. Wait, no. I haven't seen that yet.
The speeds are nuts.
Ah, this is slow.
All right, Alaska catering issue. So, we flew out of Seattle on Sunday. And I noticed you didn't get the breakfast, but I got the breakfast. And I noticed that my portion was just basically the main dish.
Okay.
And usually breakfast on Alaska comes with like a little side, maybe some bread, some fruit. None of that was present. My in-laws were also flying later out of Seattle, and their flight was actually delayed. And they were told that they're short staffed for catering. Turns out it's more than that. And it sounds like there's a ongoing catering, either work slowdown or strike at Seattle, specifically for Alaska.
So who does Alaska use?
I think it's Gatecore A.
Okay.
In Seattle, I think. But don't quote me on that.
And is Gate Gourmet for Alaska only or Gate Gourmet as a whole?
I think it's Gate Gourmet for Alaska only, I think it's their catering company, I think.
How does that work? Why would you only strike against one airline?
I'm saying I think Gate Gourmet is the who services Alaska and they don't service anybody else.
Oh, that's what you're saying. Okay.
So not good. And there was someone posted that they had received an email from Alaska saying that their flight may be under catered or not all items available due to this. So not good. Good for people to be aware of if they're flying through or from Seattle.
What's funny, this is like similar to the AA issue with Heathrow a few weeks ago, right? Which they finally resolved.
Which they're still not happy about. The flight attendants aren't happy about the catering that they're getting.
Are they not happy with the... It's because the flight attendants are not happy about the 321s.
I think they're not happy with the catering either. The catering situation out of Heathrow.
Oh, I didn't hear that part.
I think there's some dysfunction still there. Things not being loaded or being loaded incorrectly.
But that happens every time there's a catering change. And United's been going through with this at San Francisco for the last 6 months, 8 months since they changed.
A year?
Has it been a year? I don't even remember.
However long.
Yeah, however, since they changed caterers, it's been a disaster out of San Francisco. They've been having very similar issues.
Yeah. So, that could. Keep it in mind if you're flying from Seattle.
Bring your own meal if you wanted to eat.
Yep, there's a great Wendy's in the North Satellite. All right, well, I think that's a show. A little bit shorter. We're driving. You're going very fast in an Altima.
I'm not going that fast. I'm moving.
Well, the guy behind you is, like, riding your behind going this fast.
Okay, I'll let him go by.
Yeah, how about that?
I'll go by and then I'll tail in behind him.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, but we're getting to the best part of the drive.
What's the best part of the drive?
You'll see in a second.
Okay. Should we wait for my response?
Oh, well, of course. Like, it is a quintessential reference to a movie. And you, of all people, should know this reference because...
Was it the San Luis Capistrano?
No, that's we already passed
that. That's a Dumb and Dumber reference.
No, we're going to San Onofre.
Oh. I like it.
You know what I'm talking about.
I think so.
But maybe not.
Give me the reference.
Naked Gut.
Oh, yes.
Just over that turn.
Is there a sign?
Oh, no, it's right here. It is right next to the highway. You do not need a sign.
Oh.
You too can repeat the lines of, everywhere I look, I think of her.
All right, well.
And for those that don't know, San Onofre is a nuclear power plant on the side of the I-5 freeway between Orange County and San Diego.
And you can go to the beach there.
You can. They have great surfing.
So for our Patreon supporters, we're going to talk a little bit about Seattle. We're going to talk just about airports in general. And then some interesting things that we had with a new Max 8 and Foz's thoughts on power ports. So if you're interested in that, stick around. If you're not a Patreon supporter, thank you for listening. We appreciate it. And we'll talk to you next time.
Take care.
Happy travels.